There are companies out there that can outspend you. And outspending you literally, it's a zero-sum game. If they can outspend you, they can almost dominate the market. They can actually do it and just like keep spending until you can't afford to spend because the CPA is too high. Let's say we're talking about this Facebook or Google ads, that it's just not worth for you to run ads, which could lead to you not worth running the business. Growth hacking is not only a different way of marketing, but it's also efficient, smart, strategic gamification ways of using existing platforms like Facebook, Google Ads.
Hey everyone, it's Matt here for another episode of Thinking Inside the Box, a show where we discuss complex issues related to work and culture. If you're interested in checking out our other content, you can find us at bentohr.com, wherever you find your favorite podcasts by searching Thinking Inside the Box, and now in virtual reality, each Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time in AltSpace VR. In today's episode, I chat with Mario Naufel, the founder of the Athena Group of Companies, a business conglomerate that operates in more than 40 countries. And Mario is a unique individual, unlike anyone I've ever interviewed before on this podcast. And that appealed to me for several reasons. I'm often asked for best practices around networking. It's something that I take a lot of pride in. And one piece of feedback that I provide is that it's important to set aside time to meet people who are not like you. The world is changing, and a historical bias for deep technical expertise is being replaced with a preference for things like learning agility and adaptability and resilience, and meeting people from different generations or professions or regions in the world can provide a really unique perspective among a number of other different elements of diversity and inclusion. And so engaging with people like Mario helps me add context to a changing world. He has an incredible story. As recently as 2012, he was selling blenders door to door with $300 in the bank. And by deploying unconventional marketing techniques and a lot of hustle, along with efficient logistical systems, he propelled his company to $1 million in the first year of sales and $10 million in the second, all bootstrapped. In 2013 and 2014, he formed Optimum Appliances and launched kitchen brands such as HX, NV, FX, and Prestige Home Appliances to satisfy the demand for high-end kitchen appliances. And Optimum particularly went on to achieve global brand status. In 2016, he founded his incubator, Go Global. In 2017, he established the international blockchain consulting firm, quickly becoming an industry authority in the rapidly growing blockchain and crypto space. In 2018, he established a VC fund and launched accounting and law firms. His latest venture, Zense, was launched in 2019 to provide entrepreneurs with the insight to launch successful businesses on a limited budget. And he's documenting that journey, adding storytelling to a long list of accomplishments. Over the course of our nearly 45-minute conversation, Mario and I chatted about a lot. We chatted about his origin story, of course, and he gave some tremendous context and added some richness to the description I just gave, along with some lessons that he's learned along the way. We pivoted to growth hacking, a particular passion for Mario, and he shared some of his best practices again in a space that's increasingly being defined by a lack of rules, a willingness to challenge the status quo. We talked Clubhouse, we talked entrepreneurship, we talked impact investing. It was a far-ranging conversation that I certainly enjoyed, and I hope you do as well. I would love your feedback, though. So if you listen to this podcast, you either enjoy it or have feedback that's constructive, leave it in the comments section. I'd love to hear your feedback on, is Mario the type of guest that you'd want to hear more from in the future? Are you interested in more growth hacking or biohacking or more resilience type content? I'm happy to take the feedback there and apply for future guests. We had a great conversation, Mario and I. So without further ado, let's introduce Mario Naufel.
Mario, how are you doing today, sir?
Good man. How are you?
I'm doing well. I catch you in between at what it sounds like a lot of different meetings on the day. It's you are a very busy individual, and I do want to get into what you're doing today. But before we get to that point, perhaps you could help our audience understand a bit about who Mario is and a bit about your background.
Sure, man. Actually, I'm busy because I live with many of my employees. So I have over 100 employees at my various companies. But what I do, and I started doing that during the pandemic, you know, we talked briefly about the pandemic. In Turkey, I rented a big villa on the beach in Fethiye, and it was 9 bedrooms, and invited the best growth hackers in the world to come in. And we built We Are Growth Hackers, which is the largest growth hacking agency in the world, blew up my businesses, and then we offered it as a service. And now I'm doing the same thing here in Dubai. I rented a big, we call it the BitCloud Castle. It's more of a castle rather than a villa. And we've got, if I put my video on, I can show you, we've got 12 people here and some come and go. And we're all working on BitCloud and projects on that platform, which is a crypto social media platform. So I'm busy, man, because I've got all my team members around me. And I'm doing a documentary about it as well, like a journey, filming my journey. We just released episode 2 today, I think. So yeah, man, that's my life. But more about me, where I got started with nothing back in Australia. I remember I would go to Safeway or Coles, the supermarket, at midnight so I can buy bread for cheap, so I can save money. And I had $300 in the bank, started door knocking, and started making 6 figures door knocking, surprisingly. And then launched my first business, and off we go. It was e-com. That's where I started making money.
And e-com into what has turned into a pretty diverse portfolio. I want to talk about element of them, but I think for those who may not be familiar with the term growth hacking, maybe talk us through a bit about what growth hacking is in your context and what it's meant for you as part of your broader portfolio.
Yeah, man, I think they both go together, because growth hacking for me is more of a way of living or doing business rather than just a skill, as well as a skill. And I'll touch on it in both ways. So I started in e-com, then I launched an events business, then I launched a consulting firm, got into crypto, did really well, and I partnered a law firm in the crypto space, got a lot of investments. Now I've stepped up as the CEO of an investment vehicle. I've got another agency that works with publicly listed companies. Now I've got all these businesses. You can look at it two ways. Multiple sources of income, which is great, spreading yourself too thin, which is dangerous. I look at it as following what works. I test many things. I know how to build businesses and manage teams, and I just test different things and double down on what works. That's been my strategy since day one, since I made my first million and 10 million in the first couple of years of business. Now, to go back to the question about growth hacking, I genuinely think that growth hacking is the most underrated marketing strategy or marketing approach there is right now. If I want to give anyone any value, before talking about all the e-com strategies I love to geek out on about Clubhouse or Twitter Spaces or building a personal brand or recurring revenue or lifetime value, all that stuff, the biggest point, the biggest thing you could do right after listening to this podcast is go out and learn growth hacking. You can just Google growth hacking bootcamp. It's not run by me. I'm not affiliated, but it's one that we think is one of the better courses out there. Or you could just go for free and learn everything on YouTube. I'm not a big fan of courses. I'll tell you what it is, but I genuinely think this is one of the best things you could do in your life and business. It's such an important skill. If you're starting out, perfect. If you already have a business, go out and hire them. And you're going to find it difficult, because we hire any growth hacker we find. That's good. But there's not many out there. But if you do find one, it could change your business. Now, I'll tell you what growth hacking is, and I'll tell you what it does for us. Growth hacking is a way to game algorithms. So you look at Google's algorithm to rank high on Google. Everyone wants to rank high. Most people, what they do is they just start creating good content, which is important. Good content, good copy on their website, and get some hyperlinks to it. Just do the SEO stuff, which are strategies that we do and they work. But growth hacking will be a way of looking at that and thinking, okay, so what does Google look for? They look for websites with high authority scores. Like, all right, Medium is a website with a high authority score. Let me, instead of writing an article on my website, let me write it on Medium or Quora, answering a question on Quora. And then, okay, how can I make it good? Well, writing good content is the most important thing. The most important thing is the product itself. Like, I don't care what your growth hack, if the content is bad or the product at the end is bad, you're wasting your time and money. So you have to write good copy on Medium or Quora, okay? And try to go through with the strategy mentally. Imagine it, to give you an idea of how growth hackers think. Okay, so we looked at a good website with good authority score. we wrote a good article or answered a question that's relevant, or we can even ask a question. We could use one account to ask a question on Quora that's relevant. So let's say, what are the best growth hacking agency in the world? Or who are the world's best bachata dancer? I travel the world dancing bachata. Who are the world's best bachata dancers? So you ask that question on Quora, and then you use another account. Now, they have to be aged accounts that have been around for a while. You can either buy them or find someone that can do it for you, and you pay them. And then you answer it, but you don't just say you're the best. Let's say you have the best agency. You list number one, let's say Neil Patel Digital, which is Neil Patel's agency. List number two, whatever, some big agency that everyone knows. And then list your third, your boutique agency that's much smaller than the big whales as number three, because it looks more realistic. So now what you've done is you've gone to a high authority website and you've written good content and you've sneaked your name on there. But that's not enough. You need to rank high on Medium or Quora to be able to rank high on Google. So how do you rank high on Medium? Well, they look at how much time people spend on your web on the page and how many claps you get. Everyone looks at the claps. So a silly junior growth hacker would just buy claps from a website. These are all shortcuts. Not everyone's comfortable in doing them. I'm just giving you this as an example to get an idea of how growth hackers think. Now, a growth hacker would take it a step further. Be like, okay, so I can go out and buy claps, but I'm sure Medium's algorithm, Medium is not stupid. They got some great coders out there. They hire the best. So I'm sure Medium's algorithm has a way to spot if you send people randomly like on like Mechanical Turk or whatever other website similar to it. Yeah, Mechanical Turk or Microworkers, where you pay people like cents to do something really small, like go and clap somewhere, people in third world countries or second world countries. But Medium will find out that those people are going on the page, not spending 6, 7, 10 minutes reading the answer or the article, just click clap and leave. The algorithm will know these are fake. And the growth hacker would have broken that down. He's understanding or she's understanding the algorithm. So be like, okay, I need to get those people that are going out there and clapping this article to spend more time on the page, because this way the algorithm think they're reading. So how can I do that and do that at scale? Well, what we did is we tell people to the task that we send on Microworkers and Amazon Turk is we tell people send us the first letter and the last letter of every paragraph and then clap at the end. So now they need to spend time on the page to send you the first and last letter of every paragraph before clapping. The algorithm will see them spend time on the page and will think they're actually reading. And that would work. So that's, and we've done this, by the way. If you look at best bachata dancer, I'm in the top three. If you look at top clubhouse moderators, I'm in the top three on the first two results. And we've done it for many other clients and we can do it for more things. We're doing it for things now as we speak. So it's kind of a long way of going through it. I hope it brought the audience value. I didn't plan to go that detailed, but I just see so much value in it. We're doing it for ourselves and our clients. It's just working so well. And it's a shame for anyone not to use it, especially someone who's trying to achieve a lot of results without spending too much money. That's what, you know, that's how growth hackers live, really. They're very frugal. So I kind of went a bit too deep there, man, but I hope it brought value or was at least interesting. I hope you didn't even drop out.
No, it's you know, I'm still here, my friend, and I'm furiously taking notes because I think beyond just the depth that you provided, and thank you for providing the depth, what you're really playing field. So a common, you know, concern that I hear from entrepreneurs, from marketers, even in larger enterprises, is that in today's market, the majority of marketing vehicles are saturated. So they require organizations or entrepreneurs to spend significant sums of money, whether it's Facebook ads, LinkedIn ads, other types of platforms, to attempt to have the same level of visibility that other organizations are just spending obscene amounts of money to realize the same result. And if you're just starting out and you're trying to compete, if you're trying to get your message heard, and you know your earlier caveat is spot on, if it's really good content that adds a ton of value, then in theory, it should be heard or seen or consumed by lots of people. But the reality is that in a marketing context, traditionally, those who had the most resources had the competitive advantage. And why I have been interested in growth hacking in particular, because to me, it's the ultimate democratization of communication, of messaging, of marketing. And yes, there are tips and tricks that we can use along the way. But at the end of the day, if you're putting out good content, if you're providing value to people, if you're solving real world problems, then my opinion is you should be rewarded for that effort. It shouldn't just default to the people that have the most amount of assets at their disposal, because, you know, ultimately business and society is at its best when we see a constant churning of new ideas and new players and new resources. That's when we evolve. And I think particularly during a time like today, when we're, you know, on the hopefully near the end of this pandemic, we're going to see a massive recalibration of the market in a number of industries. And it provides an opportunity for people that have the right kind of thinking, the right kind of ideas, the right kind of mindset to really have success in this new kind of new world order.
Yeah, man. And I like how you said that if you're selling a good product, or if you're bringing value to the world, you're actually solving a problem. I'm not against going aggressive in your marketing or trying to stand out. And the simple reason is there are companies out there that can outspend you. And outspending you, literally, it's a zero-sum game. If they can outspend you, they can almost dominate the market. They can actually do it and just like keep spending until you can't afford to spend because the CPA is too high. Let's say we're talking about this Facebook or Google ads, that it's just not worth for you to run ads, which could lead to you not worth running the business. Growth hacking is not only a different way of marketing, but it's also efficient, smart, strategic gamification ways of using existing platforms like Facebook, Google ads. You know, when I made my first million in e-com, and the company's called Fruity, still around doing millions, my biggest company, I think, still, the e-com one. The way I made the money was I went on eBay, and in my listing, I didn't have a brand, I didn't have anything. What I did was I said in the heading of each listing, I said, do not buy, and I put competitor name. The competitor was Vitamix. And that was my strategy. I put, say, do not buy Vitamix in the listings on eBay. And that worked really well. I kind of growth hack attention on eBay.
Hey, everyone. It's Matt here, and I hope you're enjoying today's discussion. Before we continue, I wanted to make you aware of our latest creative project, HR in VR. Every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I'll connect with technology pioneers, business executives from the world's most iconic brands, and industry thought leaders to discuss the future of immersive technologies like virtual reality and their impact on future workplaces. In partnership with Microsoft, we're broadcasting each episode on LinkedIn Live and in front of a live studio audience in AltSpace. Joining is easy. For LinkedIn users, simply follow my account, MattInVR, and stay tuned Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for the LinkedIn live stream. Or for a truly immersive live experience, visit altvr.com to download AltSpace on your Mac, PC, or VR headset and join us live in our studio audience. There you'll have a chance to ask questions, meet me and our incredible guests, and connect with others from the comfort of your own home. This is the future, folks, and I hope you'll be part of it. And I'll link the details for HR and VR, along with all other relevant information, in the show notes of this podcast. And now, back to our discussion.
I did the same thing on Google before they don't allow it anymore on both platforms. And I might have played a role in doing that. So thinking that way is a skill that just gives you an edge in business and in life. You know, I can give you ways of growth hacked life, the way I learned dancing, the way I meet people, the way I live my life, the way I get things. Growth hacking is like, it requires level of intelligence. And then when you start getting technical, it requires skill as well if you want to learn it. Technical skill.
It's a great segue. You're almost like you're reading my notes, because we've talked about growth hacking in the context of a product. And, you know, many of our listeners don't currently sell products. They may be in the services business, or they may be considering how to show up differently in their life. So I'd be curious to understand from your perspective, Mario, you know, how do you apply growth hacking to your life? You mentioned dancing. You've mentioned other areas of your, outside of work pursuits. What are some things that you apply to your life in a growth hacking context?
Cool. I'll give you ones that are very micro, where like it's a direct growth hack. My business partner, when we were in Turkey on New Year's Eve, he was going quad bike, you know, the ATV in Turkey with the team. And then he started going crazy, was bored, fell off, broke his whole, shattered his knee. And it was in Turkey. And he needed to go travel to another country to be able to do surgery. Now, he booked the airlines, everything's fine. And when he went to the airlines, they said, hey, you know, you cannot actually do it because you can't bend your knee and that's a safety issue. And they wouldn't allow him on the plane, and his plane is there booked. And he needs to go do surgery. If he waits too long, his bones start to mend, start to heal themselves. And if they heal themselves the wrong way, in a deformed way, then his knee is screwed permanently. So here he is, stuck. And most people were just like, shit, what do I do? There were no practical ways of doing it, like going on another plane or anything. It just takes too long and needs 3 days in advance to book three seats and a stretcher and all that. It's just too much work. So I got the growth hacking team involved. And we kind of growth hacked our way onto the plane. First thing we did was we automated LinkedIn messages and emails to all the employees at the airlines. I think it was like Turkish Airlines, all of them at scale. Hundreds and hundreds of messages just sent within like an hour max, half an hour even, 15, 30 minutes. And then we started contacting in a manual way the top people on the platform. And then we wrote an article. All of it, like very quickly, I have a big team. Wrote an article and started spreading it on social media about the situation, how they, because they told him initially he can get on the plane. And then when he gets there, they're like, hey, actually, we made a mistake, you can't. So we started spreading that information. And then we had one of our team members, Roy. I told him to call the place where they're not letting my business partner go through the gate, the security gate, and pretend to be one of the managers at Turkish Airlines. We got some random name off the board. And he pretended to be them. He's like, hey, he called. He said, hey, I give him authority to go. We know him. It's all good. Please let him through. And that worked. So they let him through, most likely because of that. So most people wouldn't do that. It's a bit risky, and you need to think outside the box. But it's like, and the automated messages are an obvious growth hack. Growth hacking includes a lot of automated messages on Slack, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, all of it, email. Another growth hack is, you know, 4-hour chef. Tim Ferriss is a great life hacker, growth hacker. And it's about how to learn. Now, I travel the world dancing Latin. I learned really, really quickly. I don't think anyone's become an artist. So I'm considered a bachata artist, which means you get invited to festivals to dance and people want to meet you and all that. So it's like a mini celebrity in the bachata space. Most people take years to get there. I got there in less than a year. The way I got there is just doing growth hacks along the way. When I go to festivals, I'd always bring a camera person to film me all the time and make sure their lights are on, the lights of the camera. So now everyone notices me. A camera's filming me all the time. Everyone starts looking at me. I'll get a lot of attention. People already assume I'm an artist, even though I'm not. I try to sneak my way onto the stage, start dancing on the stage with other artists. That works really well. Start doing deals with festivals where I'll teach for free. I don't need money because I'm fine financially. I just do workshop for free and come to the party. And then when I come, I try to bring as much attention as I can. In Ukraine, what we did was it was Women's Day. So we gave like hundreds of flowers to hundreds of people at the festival. So those are all ways I managed to become an artist really quickly and get a lot of attention. And they're hacks. And then you can look at the way I learned dancing. I learned dance really quickly. And what I did was I kind of reverse engineered it. I would always film myself, watch myself. I would try to mix different dance styles together. And what some guys do, I don't, but some guys, they actually, because there's a guy and a girl, the guy leads the girl. That's how Latin dancing works. Some guys, and it's an interesting growth hack, and I think Tim Ferriss did it in Argentinian tango, would be the follower, the girl, and dance with a guy. Many guys do it. I've danced with guys that are trying to be a girl because it's a great way to learn. Once you know how the girl moves, then you can move better as a guy, lead better as a guy. So those are all examples of growth hacks, life hacks. There's a great book called Smart Cuts. I haven't read it in years, but it's just around that same concept. 4-Hour Chef is a great book around that same concept. And there's a lot of books about it, how to read quick, how to learn things quickly. So as a mentality, growth hacking, I apply it on at least a weekly basis in my life. And I'm a big fan of biohacking, but generally in my life, I'm on a weekly basis. I just find ways to get things that other people cannot get. Like, for example, I was at a festival and I would be able to get backstage by just understanding, like gaming the system. The security guard looks for people that are either acting like fans or, you know, act like they're not meant to be there. But if you walk backstage pretending like you belong there, and I've done this a couple of times, they'll let you through because you're just acting like you belong there. Catch Me If You Can is a great movie showing that. So it's a way of living, and it's just got me ahead in life, just gave me that advantage. It takes a lot to build it. It took me years to build that confidence and that skill set and that ability to think of these things. And in business, it's an incredible weapon.
Yeah, and it illuminates a couple things. So I think the things I take away from your examples are many of us, there's this, if you will, traditional way of doing things. And there's this acceptable way of approaching certain challenges and problems. And a lot of what you're mentioning in terms of growth hacking is just taking a non-traditional view to a traditional challenge and applying a different thinking to it. I mean, most, you know, men who are learning to dance wouldn't think to dance as the female part in a partner dancing situation, but applying that methodology makes complete sense. You need to learn both parts to be able to understand the dynamic of the dance and how the interplay of two people works in a particular form. It's also, to your point, applying a lot of energy in a very short period of time to something that you're trying to solve for. And I'm curious, specifically for you, you know, there's lots of things that are coming, popping up. We had a brief conversation before we hit record around things like Clubhouse. And I'm curious how you, Mario, assess the new things that are coming up and determine what is worth spending time to explore and what are things that you'd rather just kind of let see go by. How do you make the determination in terms of where to spend your time, knowing that it's so finite?
Great question, man. Really good question. Really freaking good question. Okay, so first, I growth hacked myself to Clubhouse to be the fastest growing person. Within a month, within 2-3 weeks, I was the biggest, I had the biggest daily room. Thousands of people would listen to me every day, 7 days a week. So that's from a growth hack. We had all these different strategies, you know, getting the right people there, moving people back to the audience and bringing them back up. So things, their followers, that they're speaking again. So we do that multiple times. It was pretty cool. And it's easy to growth hack brand new platforms. And when I say growth hacks, it's just ethical ways of doing it. Just thinking outside the box. Now, your question is about how to know where to focus. I'm a big fan of timing. The second best thing the audience could do right now beyond learning growth hacking is a 6-minute exercise. Go to Google, write Bill Gross, G-R-O-S-S, timing, T-I-M-I-N-G. And no, sorry, Bill Gross, TED, T-E-D. He did a TED speech about the importance of timing in business. Timing, according to his research, and I agree with it 100%, timing is the most important factor for business success. More important than, and he's a smarter guy than me, and his study was pretty interesting. More important than the team, more important than the business plan, than the freaking IT, than the funding, everything. Timing was the number one factor that determined a business's success or failure. If you launched YouTube back in 1995, which he did around that time, doesn't matter how well you do it. Timing is not right. The internet is too slow for videos. If you launch it in 2000 and whatever, whenever YouTube launched it, YouTube started as a dating website, but they pivoted to YouTube because the timing was right. People needed that. The internet was fast enough and getting faster. Clubhouse 2 years ago might have not blown up like it did during the pandemic. The timing is right. So getting a product launch or a business launch at the right time gives you a massive advantage in succeeding. Just increases the likelihood of succeeding. Launching a restaurant right now or making, learning crypto and making money in crypto, crypto is definitely much higher likelihood to make a return. And long-term as well, focusing on the blockchain technology, which is blowing up, is more likely to get a return than focusing on opening up a farm in some random place, like a normal basic farm, not a vertical farm. So yeah, that's timing, man. Like all my businesses were based on that. I got into crypto in 2017 at the peak of the hype. And look at me now, law firm, consulting firm, big name on Big Cloud Holding, Big Cloud, the platform, all the investments that I made, and stepping up as a CEO of the investment vehicle. NFT that's going public in June to invest in NFTs and crypto. All that because I launched my crypto consulting firm, IBC, back in 2017. My first business, Fruity, was selling blenders and juicers, high-end blenders and juicers, at a time when they were booming in Australia, like blowing up. Timing was right. We are growth hackers. Timing is nothing. Wow, growth hacking is not blowing up, but it's growing gradually, and it just made sense. But most of my other product launches or ventures, from Hey Checks to Zens, to Guilt Free, all these businesses, North Equities, which it's not my business, I'm just one of the shareholders there, but it was launched by my business partner just before the bull run in the stock market a couple of years ago. And he's doing 8 figures now, or I'm involved in it. So yeah, man, like the timing for me is everything.
It's critical. And in a lot of different trends come and go, and catching the wave at the right time is a very important piece of it. And to your point, you can definitely be too early into a market. You can certainly, like the majority of people, be too late in the market. And know, in the context of the pandemic, one thing that we also discussed briefly off air was the idea that the pandemic, of course, has been a horrible tragedy in a humanitarian context and in a public health context, and in a lot of cases, a social cause context. And it's also created a lot of opportunities for businesses, for entrepreneurs, for organizations to recalibrate, to rebrand, to launch, to pivot, because the world has fundamentally changed at a rate that it hadn't before this period of time. And trying to make sense of where the world is going, a lot of organizations and individuals are making bets on things like cryptocurrency or virtual reality or, you know, machine learning and in concepts that have been discussed perhaps in the years past, but the environment wasn't quite right for a move at this point in time. I think that advice around timing is a really important piece. I want to go back to a topic that we discussed briefly. And as you mentioned and gave examples of growth hacking, both in a business context, but also in a personal context, you gave some examples around certain actions or behaviors that some folks may find to be a little bit questionable in terms of an ethical piece of it. They're not illegal. They're not, you know, immoral, but there's some things where, again, this is accepted way of doing things. We have these rituals in society and in culture that we tend to adhere to. I'm curious how, you know, you apply a moral compass to growth hacking and how you think through what you're going to do versus what you're not going to do.
My moral compass is really simple. If I don't hurt anyone, and if I'm bringing value, then I will make noise doing so. That's that simple. I think if someone goes through Facebook or Google ads and does things by the book and then sells a shitty or scammy product, or someone makes a lot of noise, does automated messages, ranks highly on Google by taking shortcuts, by selling a good product, something of value, then amen to them. So that's been my conclusion to this day. And I think that if I'm not aggressive, someone else will be. Me being aggressive and having a growth hacking approach to life and business is a risk. It does have a backlash sometimes. And I'll give you examples. But it's a risk worth taking, because whenever I enter something, I make noise, I get attention. And sometimes I do have to deal with repercussions, like BitCloud. I'm spending a lot of time on BitCloud. And within a week, everyone's talking about me. Now, no one's being talked about more on BitCloud than myself. Not all of it positive. Some of it negative. Why? Because my aggressive marketing bothered a few people. And then, you know, some people start, you know, Chinese whispers. And then it becomes me from being aggressively marketing to suddenly I'm a scammer, selling scam, doing this and that, that are wrong. Then I had to go and clarify it, show all the evidence, and I fixed it. But I wouldn't have had to deal with those assumptions if I wasn't so aggressive in marketing. Because if you get an email or someone messaging you, many people will immediately be like, oh, that's a scam. Even though what they're selling could be something really good, really ethical. Not many. Some people will. And BitCloud is a really small community. For LinkedIn, Instagram, you don't have that issue. But that's a kind of an outcome of me being aggressive. But then when people are starting to know, like, hold on, this guy is actually aggressive in marketing. But when we look at what he's done on the platform, you know, I brought more, you know, eight figures, or I brought seven, bringing eight figures onto the platform, tens of millions of dollars to be invested into BitCloud. I'm working with a few investors. I'm building businesses on the platform. I've supported people that got scammed. I'm helping people not get scared. Like I've done everything beyond right, but I was aggressive in my marketing. So when people connected those dots, then they're like, hold on, this guy's legit, and it all paid off. But if I wasn't aggressive in the first place, you might say, yeah, you would have gotten there anyway, just would have been slower. Would I? You know, everyone looks at the success stories. The potential of failing is really, when you're starting a business, you're most likely going to fail. These are numbers. Over 90% of businesses that look to raise capital fail to raise capital. That's in the US, let alone when you go to countries that don't have the same opportunities. And then from the businesses that raise capital, from smart VCs that believe they will succeed or may succeed, more than 90% fail. How do you turn those odds around to favor you? Because it's really sexy to look at all those success stories of people that became billionaires and did this, did that. But no one looks at the metrics. No one looks at the people that failed. The really smart, really capable people, barely enough money to pay the bills or just living a simple life. It's because it's really tough out there. 7 billion people on the planet, finite resources. Everyone is fighting for the same resources. That's how I look at it. Growth hacking gives me an edge. And if I'm doing things ethically, if I don't hurt anyone on the way, and I get an edge in business and in life, I've got no regrets whatsoever.
I appreciate that. It's a simplistic view to apply to a very complex problem. And ultimately, it's up to the individual to make that decision for themselves. You know, one thing that I hear a lot. So, you know, Mario, we didn't have a chance to really go deep into my personal experience, but I spent a large portion of the early part of my career in the corporate world. I grew up at a time when being part of a big enterprise with a big banner was an aspirational target for many people coming out of university and colleges, and you wanted the credibility of being with a big firm. I was, by the way, the anomaly in my family. Most of my family were entrepreneurs, real estate, finance, other industries as well, and I chose the path of the quote-unquote more traditional area. At the same time, I found myself disenfranchised with that choice about 20 years in because I realized that a lot of the things that I wanted to do to have impact weren't being realized. But what I was actually being deployed to do was to help organizations drive earning statements or to, you know, process mergers and acquisitions. And what I wanted to do was actually affect more positive change. And I wanted to be more rewarded more closely to the true impact that I was having inside of an organization. So I ultimately decided to leave and then launch a number of social enterprises. So as a consequence of that, I get a lot of corporate executives, business leaders, in some cases students who approach me and say, "Matt, how did you make the transition? How did you, how did you shift your mindset from, you know, obviously a corporate mindset, very different than an entrepreneurial growth mindset? How did you make that transition? How did you make that shift?" And a lot of the advice that I give to people very closely resembles the advice that you've provided today. Taking chances, being first to market where possible, thinking through, how to reverse engineer complex problems with unique ways of thinking. And as I mentioned earlier, we're in a stage now of the, if you will, we're on the precipice, if not fully now into the fourth industrial revolution. The way things have worked for the last 200 years will no longer apply and no longer have the same currency going forward. I'm curious, for someone like yourself, Mario, what are some of the trends that you're looking at? What are some of the knowledge gaps that you're looking to close? What are some of the things that you're thinking about that you believe are going to be ongoing trends into the future that you want to spend more time thinking about?
Instead of giving you trends, I'll actually give you sources that are really, really good. I'm not affiliated with them. I'm just a customer. One of them is trends.co, T-R-E-N-D-S.co. Another one is explodingtopics.com. And there's many others. I'm part of many. They break down trends for you on a weekly basis or monthly basis. Glimpse is another one, G-L-I-M-P-S-E. I've found tremendous value in them. I launched a lot of businesses, got a lot of ideas, products from these sources, newsletters, whatever you want to call them. Now, long-term trends, long-term shifts in our society, you know, they're not hard to spot, but they're hard to fathom. Blockchain is an obvious one, and I'm very involved in it. Most people get excited about it when there's a hype, short-term hype, and they forget about it when there isn't a hype. But blockchain hasn't changed. The potential hasn't changed. People overestimate the short-term potential of evolution, or not evolution, of innovation, but they underestimate the long-term potential. And that second part is what I care about. Blockchain's got incredible potential. Patreon, OnlyFans, monetizing content, the way influencers monetize their content, it is changing. I might invest in a company that's actually playing a part in that. So those are two of many examples. There's just so many. Like, the list is endless. It's about going through them. I gave you two sources. There's a lot more. Finding those long-term trends, finding a short-term trend within that long-term trend, and just doubling down on that, testing different things, seeing what works. Because when I got into crypto, I started with consulting, just random consulting, just a way to dip my toes in the water. Then I pivoted to fundraising or marketing. And then I had the law firm. Then I started investing. Then I started offering different marketing services. Then I stepped up as a CEO now and moving to a more corporate position. Then I got involved in BitClass. So it started somewhere. And then I kept following the next opportunity, all these different things, all within the umbrella of crypto and blockchain. So find a big long-term umbrella and then find trends and opportunities within that.
It makes a lot of sense. And I'm curious, I want to ask the question in a slightly different way, not so much in the context of trends, but in a context of, if you will, competencies or attributes. What are some of the things that you think are I don't want to say skills necessarily, but some of the attributes of successful people. How do you think that's going to evolve into the future?
Attributes of successful people. Let's go with conscientiousness. Conscientiousness is one of the most important characteristics for a successful person. And it incorporates four things. Number one, being organized. Number two, I forgot. But number three and number four are the most important. Or being organized, being a perfectionist, and working hard. And then there's one I forgot. But the most important two out of those four things I want to focus on are working hard and working smart. Okay? So working hard is obvious. Two people doing the same things, all else being equal, all externalities being equal, though the person that will continuously work longer and be consistent, consistency is everything, will obviously win. So that's an easy one. Working smart is the really tricky and complex one, where it goes back to finding smart cuts through things like growth hacking. Working smart is doing the right thing, calibrating your compass, heading in the right direction. So if you're really good at something, but you're doing it in the wrong area, in the wrong industry, at the wrong time, you're wasting your time and money and energy. So what I would recommend to someone that wants to be, you know, wants to have a high likelihood of success is, number one, find what it is that you want to do. A timing comes in, calibrating that compass, knowing exactly where to point, and then consistently walk in that direction. People that do this, they don't have to have many more skills. Their likelihood of succeeding is higher than others.
I think it's great advice. And I think it speaks to just the sheer amount of opportunity that we all have going forward. Whatever you choose to spend your time doing, because of the context that is now shifting and materially shifting going forward, it's an opportunity for us to look into the future and align what we're really passionate about with where we see opportunity into the future. And whether that is in a crypto space, whether that's moving into, you know, more into e-commerce, whether that's looking at a traditional industry and asking how it's going to be disrupted in this new kind of hybrid world that we're all living in, I think it's an opportunity for us to be a lot more intentional. And, you know, I think that, you know, you've raised a number of really, really interesting points over the course of our conversation, Mario. I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank you for being so service-minded. You've provided a lot of value and been very thoughtful and intentional about providing depth to your answers. And I just want to wish you a lot of success. I mean, I'm sure you're going to have it, but as you continue to, you know, transcend the traditional ways of doing things, as you continue to try and apply new thinking to old problems, and as you continue to find, if you will, those shortcuts to success, just want to wish you a lot of it, and hope to talk to you again real soon.
Man, I really appreciate your time, and I love the thoughtful questions.
At Bento HR, we enable your HR strategy with custom HR technology procurement, implementations, and integrations to liberate your team from administration, enhance their productivity and experience, to position them at the center of your organization's transformation, where they belong. With experience as an HR executive myself, I have a real appreciation of the challenges facing today's HR leaders. The world is changing. Your industry is being disrupted. Your organization is transforming. And all the while, you're trying to do more with less. You're being asked to simultaneously model fiscal restraint while the expectations of your departments are only increasing. At Bento HR, we can support you at every stage of your transformation, from architecting the strategy to developing and selling the business case internally. We support procurement, implementations, and ongoing sustainment. And we tie it all together with a deep knowledge of the HR profession and over six decades of combined experiences from our founding team, who has worked in or supported large HR organizations across multiple industries, including, but not limited to, financial services, technology, retail, transportation, and healthcare. Check out Bento HR today to build your very own Bento box, which doubles as your business case for transformation. Leveraging recent research into the upside of digital automation inside organizations, and with your help, in answering a few simple questions related to your organization, our Bento Builder will provide a directional business case for change. So log on to www.bentohr.com and build your Bento box today.